Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much, Tom. Over the past year, the Australian economy has been subject to a number of very strong, often countervailing forces. These have included strong demand for commodities, rising global inflation, global financial markets instability, which keeps recurring, consumer caution, slow population growth and slow productivity growth. And the economy has also been affected by some very severe weather events. So today, I'd like to look back over the past year and review how these forces have shaped the economy and the bank's thinking on monetary policy. If we start by casting our minds back about a year ago, many of you might recall that the bank at that time was starting to contemplate whether it should move from a relatively neutral setting of monetary policy to one that was slightly restrictive. The global economy at that time was growing at a solid pace, though there were, even then, downside risks. Domestically, there was a rebalancing of demand taking place from public spending to private spending. The outlook for business investment was particularly strong. Employment was growing very quickly. Unemployment had fallen back to around 5%. And inflation was forecast to reach the top end of the target range over the next couple of years. The board's assessment of these circumstances was that if they continued and the outlook evolved as expected, there would be a case to raise interest rates a little further at some point. However, the uncertainty in global markets due to the spread of sovereign debt concerns beyond Greece was seen as posing downside risk to the global economy, and of course that meant for Australia as well. Also, the strong exchange rate and the weak demand for credit pointed to financial conditions perhaps being somewhat tighter than might have been indicated simply by reference to interest rates. These considerations were seen as reasons for caution, and in the event, the board held interest rates steady through to November 2010. By the November meeting, financial market volatility had declined and the Chinese economy was continuing to grow strongly. Earlier downside risks to global growth had diminished, and it was becoming clear that global GDP would record a very strong increase for 2010 as a whole. Domestically, employment had continued to grow very quickly. There'd also been some differences in performance amongst various sectors of the economy, but overall, it appeared that the resource utilisation rate in the economy was tightening. The CPI outcome for the September quarter had been a little lower than expected, but the assessment was that the downward trend in inflation had largely run its course. The forecast envisaged a strengthening economy with the effects of the rising terms of trade more than offsetting those from fiscal tightening. Also, inflation was testing the top end of the target range by the end of the forecast period. The board therefore concluded that the balance of risks had shifted to the point where a move to a slightly restrictive stance of monetary policy was prudent, and it decided to lift the cash rate by 25 basis points to 4.75%. Now, banks responded to that November rate increase in the cash rate with substantially larger increases in interest rates on housing loans. You recall they were about 40 basis points on average. The size of this increase and the controversy it created seemed to have a noticeable impact on household behaviour. Consumer confidence fell, though it did remain well above average levels still. Coincidentally, there was also a renewed step up in financial market volatility, again due to the widening government debt problems in Europe. This too probably contributed to households becoming less confident. At the same time, however, the prices of commodities important to Australia, that is mainly coal and iron ore, continued to strengthen, and the prospects for the terms of trade were revised up further. The outlook for investment in the resource sector remained very strong. And the board concluded at its December meeting that having moved in a forward-looking way in November, there was scope to hold rates steady for a while to see how conditions in Australia developed and how the various risks in the economy evolved. As we moved into the early months of 2011, domestic economic activity was severely affected by floods and cyclones. The two main economic impacts of this were the sharp fall in coal production and the destruction of the Queensland banana crop. The former meant that GDP was likely to fall in the March quarter, although at that point it was still thought that it would recover in the June and September quarters, while the destruction of the banana crop meant that the CPI inflation would be higher over the year ahead due to the sharp or temporary increase in banana prices. Now, neither of these factors by itself was seen by the board as having a direct implication for monetary policy, but it was recognised that they would make reading the underlying trends in the economy more difficult in the months ahead. Global economic data generally continued to be strong in the early months of 2011, particularly in Asia, but also in the United States and Germany. Commodity prices continued to rise, and there were increasing signs that this was feeding via increased cost pressures into inflation outcomes in a wide range of countries. As a result, there was a general trend towards tightening monetary policy through Asia and Latin America. Domestically, the effects of the floods were becoming clearer in the data, and our liaison with mining companies was starting to point to a more protracted recovery in production. Economic indicators, however, were mixed. Business conditions were around average. The outlook for investment was strong. Unemployment was holding steady at a low level, but retail sales had been growing only modestly. Financial market uncertainty had lessened following further measures taken by European governments, though social unrest in the Middle East and North Africa was still keeping markets on edge to some extent. Against this background, the board saw little need to raise the level of interest rates further in February, March or April. In May, the board again held the cash rate steady. However, the CPI outcome for the March quarter was higher than expected, and inflation forecasts were scaled up somewhat. Global economic growth was expected to continue at an above-trend pace, notwithstanding the disruption to the global supply chains that came from the Japanese earthquake in March. Commodity prices were also higher than earlier expected, and global inflationary forces had in fact risen even further. Therefore, while the board saw the existing mildly restrictive stance of monetary policy as appropriate for the time being, its assessment was that if conditions evolved in line with the outlook, another rise in interest rates would most likely be required at some point if inflation was to remain consistent with the medium-term target. By the June meeting, signs were emerging that economic growth in many developed economies had lost some momentum. Increased financial volatility, as the debt problems in Europe again spread, added to the downside risks. Growth in China and other parts of Asia, however, remained a bright spot in the world economy. March quarter national accounts suggested that the impact of the floods on Queensland coal production had been significantly larger than expected, and the timing of the recovery in production was pushed out further. While the outlook for mining investment was very strong, non-mining investment was looking softer and households were showing more signs of caution, with confidence declining. Households' perceptions of their personal finances over the coming year were particularly weak. It was also more apparent that employment growth had slowed, though this appeared to be taking place against the background of slowing population growth, and unemployment was holding steady at a relatively low rate of 5% still. While the board remained of the view that if conditions evolved in line with the forecasts, further tightening of monetary policy would be necessary at some point, the flow of data had not added any urgency to the need to tighten or adjust policy. Accordingly, the cash rate was continued to be held steady. At the time of the July meeting, global economic growth had eased and the downside risks stemming from the European debt problems looked more significant. In Australia, households remained cautious and the housing market was soft. Also, it now appeared that the slow recovery in coal production would mean that our earlier GDP forecast for 2011 would not be met. Nonetheless, the medium-term outlook for the Australian economy remains strong. In these circumstances, the Board continued to hold rates steady, noting that the CPI outcome for the June quarter will be published the next month, and this will provide an update on inflation. The state of the global and domestic economies had not changed much by the time the Board met again in August, but the CPI outcome for the June quarter again surprised on the upside. Price increases for a range of manufactured goods were larger than might have been expected in the light of the appreciation of the exchange rate and the ongoing caution amongst consumers. There was also the possibility that the slower growth in productivity was pushing up unit labour costs at a pace faster than consistent with the inflation target. The Board, therefore, at the August meeting discussed whether there was a case to tighten monetary policy further. The general case to do so was that the overall economy was continuing to operate with relatively little spare capacity, and the staff forecast showed inflation rising above the target over the forecast period. But on the other hand, activity in parts of the non-mining economy was subdued, and downside risks to the global economy had increased significantly due to the volatility we'd seen in financial markets. Also, the softness in credit demand and the high exchange rate pointed to financial conditions exerting a reasonable degree of restraint on the economy. These considerations led the Board to conclude that it would be prudent still to continue to hold interest rates steady. Now, summarising all this, the general pattern that has emerged over the past year is broadly as follows. First, the effects of the mining boom have turned out to be stronger than expected a year ago. The terms of trade are noticeably higher. The forecasts for national income have been revised up, as has the forecast for mining investment. Second, despite this strength in the mining sector, overall economic growth is turning out to be weaker. The forecast published earlier this month reduced GDP growth for 2011 to 3.25% against the previous forecast from last November of 3.75%. Now, part of this downward revision reflected the higher exchange rate and also some softening in various elements of demand. However, some of the revision was also reflecting a slowing in the economy's capacity to supply goods and services due to weather events and slower growth in the labour force. In recent quarters, for example, growth in the working age population has been running at an annualised rate of only a little above 1%, which is well down from its peak of about 2.25% a few years ago. In these circumstances, while employment growth has slowed noticeably, there's been little change in the unemployment rate. The third point I'd make is that inflation outcomes for 2011 are likely to turn out to be higher than thought last November, both in headline terms and in underlying terms. Inflation forecasts for the longer term have risen to be a little above the top end of the target range. Now, this was the situation as it stood at the time of the last Board meeting. As you know, since then, market volatility has become more extreme. And an important issue ahead of us will be to assess what impact this is likely to have on global and domestic economic activity, commodity prices and inflation. As yet, there's little hard information on which to base these judgments. So let me conclude. The main reason for running through this material has been to make the point that the environment for monetary policy over the past year has been challenging. As the year has progressed, the resources boom has strengthened, but the divergence between the mining and non-mining sectors of the economy has increased, and the mix of growth and inflation has turned out to be less favourable than expected a year ago. That is, there's been less growth but more inflation. Decisions on monetary policy through the year have sought to balance these various forces. Now, this challenge remains. In fact, with the recent volatility in financial markets adding to the uncertainty about the global economic outlook, it does not look like the challenge is going to become any easier over the months ahead. Thank you very much.
I've got a question, maybe for a bit further in the future. If some of the big economies, US and Europe, would decide that inflation was the way out of their problems, as a small open economy with sort of an inflation band as a target, do you see that as a problem? Is that going to be a difficult problem for central bank to manage if that were then an outturn?
Look, there's no doubt that if there's a global trend, upward trend in inflation, it makes every central bank's job more difficult. And, it's a very hard to stand totally against a global trend. We saw that even in the early 1970s. Even countries like Germany, which had a very strong anti-inflation bias, experienced quite a noticeable pickup in inflation through that period, despite the very tough measures they took. So, yes, it would make life more difficult if that was to happen.
David Slezer, I suppose the follow-on must be, what would you be forced to do you think, in that situation?
What would we be forced to do? Well, there's no doubt it would create a much more difficult environment in which to work, and the board would have to think very carefully about how it was going to play that. It's a hypothetical situation. It's a bit hard to know what we would do until we saw how that situation arose. The bank has got a clear mandate to keep inflation in the 2-3% range, and I think we would try very hard to do that. The follow-up question is, if the rest of the world's having inflation, if we were raising interest rates here domestically, this would cripple the economy. Look, as I said, there's no doubt the decisions would become much tougher in an inflationary environment. Look, the problem the world's facing at the moment is that, we went through 15 years where China was really a source of disinflation or deflation for the world. China has now turned around to be a source of inflation. And even the large countries who are experiencing reasonably high levels or quite high levels of unemployment still have experienced, despite that, a pickup in inflation. And as I say, it's a more difficult environment. Central banks' work now is a lot harder than it was in the second half of the 1990s, when China was a very positive supply shock for the world.
Fulvio Barbio. The question I had was, and you didn't mention that in your speech, Rick, about how the Reserve Bank's policy and how it sees the developments over time, given the factors you mentioned, how does the fiscal policy stance of government play into your decisions going forward?
Well, we're in the very fortunate position in this country where the fiscal position of the government is very, very good by international standards. And, the fiscal policy is something that we take into account in setting our monetary policy. The bank has no responsibility for fiscal policy, but it's something we watch closely and we take that into account in what we do. But as I say, the overall fiscal situation in this country is very solid compared with most other developed economies.
Hugh McKay from Westpac. We've seen a substantial increase in indicators of financial stress over the last couple of weeks, and you can go across the whole catalogue of those, and they're all moving in the wrong direction. Over the last couple of years, we've had a very good illustration of how financial stress can affect the real economy. Have you made any moves internally to formalise financial stress indicators into your forecasting frameworks? Or are you relying more on an intuitive approach?
Well, I think with things like financial stress, it's very hard to formalise those. I think you have to rely on your intuition. My sense is that what we're seeing now is still very different from what we saw in 2008. It's much more selective. People understand what the issue is much clearer than they did in 2008. And so far as the Australian financial system goes, it's been very much less affected this time around than it was in 2008. The banks are having no trouble raising funds. Liquidity's ample. So it's a very different situation. That's why I think it is very difficult to to try and formalise any of those financial indicators, which are very subjective, into some sort of model.
Let me just slip in a quick question. As someone who comes from overseas, I come from a place where there's quite low unemployment, but I am American, and I look at the unemployment here, and I it's obviously very, very low, and the economy seems very, very strong. Except I look at the exchange rate now, and it seems to be very, very high. And I, to the limited extent that I speak to people in manufacturing, it seems to be extraordinarily difficult for them to operate. And we saw the announcement in the paper yesterday, but that may merely be a manifestation of what many, many companies feel. And a lot of the statistics that central banks are forced to work with are historic statistics, because inevitably, and the unemployment rate is, I don't know, somewhere around 5%. Is there ever a suspicion that it might be quite a bit higher than that, but you just can't see it yet? And I just base that on the fact that manufacturers are saying it's just so hard at 105 to produce or whatever it is. So there may be many layoffs going on quietly throughout the country and many people in the industrial economy. And we got the talk this morning where Martin was so articulate when he said that a lot of the manufacturing the processes in mining are increasingly automated, and therefore you're getting a lot of efficiency gains, which means that you won't drive down unemployment there.
Well, there's a few issues there. I think everybody in Australia understands what the issues are when you have a resource boom. The boom started back in the middle of last decade, and it's been going for a while, and we saw the first phase of that in the pre-crisis years. And now that it's coming back again, and people understand that basically, overall, the boom is good for the economy, but there's parts of the economy that do suffer as a result of it because of the structural changes that take place. Now, those changes have been transmitted on this occasion by the exchange rate, the high exchange rate. But if you look back through previous booms in Australia, there were periods when we didn't have a floating exchange rate, there were still stresses and strains in the economy caused by the resource boom. They were coming through different ways. They were coming through with much faster wage increases. They were coming through with inflation. So people focus on the exchange rate as being the source of the problem, but the real underlying force is the structure of the economy is changing very dramatically. And one way or another, is going to happen, whatever demand for resources is so strong. So, look, the manufacturing sector, not all the manufacturing sector, but big parts of it are finding life more difficult at this exchange rate, and we've seen the results of that in recent days. I don't think anybody's really can work out what can be done about that.
It's Sue Lannan from the PM program on ABC Radio. I wanted to continue the same theme. When you saw the BlueScope Steel job losses, what do you think about some of that commentary that the manufacturing industry is perhaps the collateral damage of the mining industry? And also, would you consider intervening in regards to the currency?
Look, I think most people accept that the manufacturing sector is suffering because of the strength in the mining sector. You could have arguments about the extent and how widespread it is, but I think, broadly speaking, that is something that's widely accepted. On the currency, I don't think the current circumstances would warrant intervention. I mean, if you just stood back and look at what's happened to the currency and compare it with what's happened to the terms of trade, you really wouldn't say the currency was out of line. Basically, it's moved up in line with what's happened to the terms of trade. The problem is, of course, that it is a lot higher than what it used to be, and this is part of the force that's causing adjustment on the economy. But in a situation where you can't argue against the fundamental strength of the move, intervention, I don't think, would have any meaningful effect. And countries overseas, there's been plenty of countries overseas who have done intervention, and I have to say, my reading is that most of that has been ineffective.
David Hetherington from Per Capita, a public policy think tank. Rick, you mentioned a minute or two ago that you thought the situation that we face now is a lot different to 2008. Do those remarks apply only to Australia, or do you think the same about the world situation? And secondly, if you think about the position of central bankers and economic policymakers in Europe and North America, what tools do they have left? Interest rates are close to zero. Public balance sheets are stripped. Quantitative easing doesn't seem to have worked. What's left in the toolbox?
My comments about 2008 did refer to the Australian economy. I think markets are differentiating more than they did in 2008, and that's because I think markets understand the scope of the issue here. Everybody knows this issue has arisen essentially out of excessive government debt in some developed countries. And the focus of markets is on those institutions that are exposed to that debt. Our institutions aren't exposed to that debt in any meaningful way. So it's really about sort of European banks and about US banks. I've lost track of the second part of the question on that. Oh, the tools, yes. I thought there's a reason why I'd forgotten that. I don't know. I think you have to address those questions to people overseas more. I mean, we haven't been forced to sort of think in these very innovative terms here because all our conventional tools have worked. My guess is the Fed's reaching the limit of what it can do. Might be able to do some more. I don't know. I think it's sort of getting towards the end of the line.
Michael Collins, Fidelity. Rick, out of the mining boom, do you think we're going to get a current account surplus? And if not, do you think we're going to have a problem in terms of net foreign debt and gross foreign debt at some point?
Yeah, well, it's possible. The current account is back to, I think, in the last quarter or so, around the now. It's probably going to be running at an annual rate of only about 1% of GDP deficit, which has narrowed a long way from where we were. Who knows? There's two forces acting on the current account. One is the flow of exports coming from the existing output of existing mines. The second is the very large-scale investment that's taking place, a large part of which is imported, to build new mining capacity. And those two factors are sort of working against each other. But the net effect so far has been that the current account deficit has narrowed a lot. It's possible. When I joined the bank in the early 1970s, that was in the middle of a resource boom, and I remember my first year at work, the current account was in surplus, so it is possible.
Brenton Saunders from Taurus Funds. I heard an interesting comparison drawn between Canada and Australia the other day in terms of monetary policy, and the suggestion was interest rates in Canada are set for the slow part of the economy, whereas in Australia interest rates are set for the fast part of the economy. And given your comments on sources of inflation being China-related, commodities-related, do you think inflation targeting is an appropriate tool to be managing policy with?
As
the primary tool?
The core of central banking.
My word, yes. Well, look, there's a lot of similarities between Canada and Australia, but there's also a lot of differences. And, you know, the main thing is that our biggest trading partner is growing by 10% a year, and their biggest trading partner is struggling to come out of quite a severe recession. So you can understand that there's going to be some differences in monetary policy. The housing cycles are different too, in the sense that the Canadians went into this. They hadn't had much of a run-up in house prices before they went into this. They're having more of one now, broadly because of their low interest rates. So there are differences. So I don't think that characterisation you gave would really be a fair characterisation. I think it just reflects a quite different sort of environment in which those two economies are working. So in terms of inflation targeting, look, central banking is about the country's money and the price level. And you can define that in different ways. You can find it as inflation targeting or money supply targeting or something, but there's no point in doing central banking if it's not focusing on the country's finances. That's basically what central banks do. And, you know, whether you want to express that as an inflation target or something else is not really all that important. The key is you want to have a policy that follows very sound money. And that's what we're doing.
Hi, I'm Sophia from Market News International. Can you envisage a scenario in which global commodity prices remain high? Inflation forecast is still for the top of your target band, and you have to cut interest rates here.
If I understand the question, you're painting a scenario where commodity prices are high.
Yes.
And inflation's running over the top of the target range.
Yes.
And we're forced to cut interest rates.
Yes.
I suppose that's possible. What would be the mechanism that would lead to that?
The two-speed economy, confidence down.
Well, if that was the case, and it's highly likely that if in that environment inflation wouldn't be the serious issue that you'd portrayed. I don't want to say anything's impossible, but the sort of picture you're painting is not one that I would immediately see as sort of being entirely consistent. I think if the non-mining economy was that soft, I don't think we would have such a serious issue on inflation.
But isn't that what the current scenario is? Two-speed economy, business confidence down, global commodity prices high, and inflation top expectations for the top of the range. And yet expectations of rate cuts.
Yeah, but look, overall, the thing to keep in mind is the economy overall is operating at a very high level of capacity. The unemployment rate hasn't budged from 5%. It's a very low level, and it's basically holding steady. So, the thing that's changed in the past year, as I touched on in my talk, is that the supply capacity of the economy has slowed. The rate of increase in the working age population has slowed by over a percentage point. Similarly, productivity growth is quite modest. So in that environment, it's the thing that's sort of been noticeable this year is that the supply side of the economy has slowed, and that is why we're seeing, even though we have soft retail sales and a few other things going on, basically the labour market hasn't softened at all.